You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll hear about some of the concerns that advocates for people without shelter, without internet access, or with disabilities have raised about access to the census, which is available online for the first time ever.
Seniors and people with disabilities face huge hurdles with digital access for a handful of reasons. One is that so many, particularly people with disabilities, are low income, right? And so poor people are less likely to own a computer, to have a tablet or something, to have had access to learning how to use the equipment. Many seniors are not comfortable with computers.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Seniors, people with disabilities, homeless people, and low-income people have often been left behind by the internet and the devices that access it. This year, the census, a constitutionally mandated count of every person in the country that happens every 10 years, is being conducted online for the first time, with phone, paper, and in-person options for those who don't respond online. But the digital divide means filling out an online questionnaire isn't accessible to everyone. An estimated 10,000 people in the city don't have reliable internet access. Around 8,000 people at any given time don't have reliable access to power because they're homeless. And more than 12% of the country's population lives with a disability, some of which can limit access to participation in the census. In previous years, if a household didn't answer initial prompts to fill out the census on paper or by phone, workers called enumerators would come knocking on their doors. This is why the census is known as the country's biggest peacetime mobilization. It requires lots of people to conduct in-person visits. This week, more than 500,000 enumerators are being mobilized to follow up with households that haven't yet completed the census. But with the coronavirus pandemic, the timeline for that in-person count has become a little unclear, while also being accelerated. NPR reports that the Census Bureau is ending all of its counting work for the 2020 census on September 30th. A month sooner than expected. The previous deadline to finish counting was set for the end of October. And back in April, Congress was asked for a deadline extension as well as a funding boost to complete the census. But now the director of the Census Bureau has confirmed that all counting, whether in-person counts or the collection of responses online, will wrap up at the end of September. There are lots of other events on this timeline, but the coronavirus pandemic has changed things. For one thing, in late February, census workers were ramping up efforts to count homeless people. I talked about this with Sunny Lay, a U.S. Census Bureau partnership specialist for the San Francisco Bay Area.
Census is one of those things for an immigrant to sort of it's resonate with you, and it's real, and it's very personal. Census is personal. A lot of people think it's very up here. Is the federal government come in and count people and leave. Actually, everybody that you meet locally here, we live here. We come from the community.
Back in early March, he described for me how census workers had been mapping the locations of people without addresses.
And we do conduct another count with what we call group quarters. Those are homeless shelters, transitional housing, and other places. So that's the rolling data that we accumulate throughout the decade. That's one level of data. The next level of data is actually comes from the county itself, from the continuum of care office of each county, which is responsible for PIT, point in time count. So that's another source of data. So that's two sources of data. The third source of data is the one that we recently did. That's by asking the counties and cities and advocates to look through our list and add, we call add verification. So actually, they added further details just in case, because shelters change or close. Some of them close, and some of the small soup kitchens, they close, like come and go. And also the population's transient, so they move. And then the fourth level data entry is from the local census office workers and outreach workers. So we've been going out to meet with community groups and organizations for the past 2 years. So four sources of data, we combine them together. And also we use the data from 2010 census to compare notes, whether what changed, what haven't changed. And then we combine them into a list, and that's how we go out So we actually scientifically we combined all these sources of information to make sure that we have a good comprehensive list. And beginning of February 3rd, we had staff that went back out to verify these locations. We verified the locations, the addresses, the contact information, and the nature of these locations. And also we had staff literally driving down each street up and down because, you know, it's dependent on the weather. And also, unfortunate, we have sweeps. So people are forced from their tents or they sleep in places. And so we have to keep up. We have to keep updating it. And we are getting close because that operation begins on March 30th. So we've been updating the list like crazy.
This list, what is the list of? It's locations where people locations,
are? Okay. The soup kitchens, for example, homeless shelters, runaway youth shelters like Larkin Street. And then we have encampments. Mm-hmm. So we geocode all the locations, whether it's on the overpass, encampments, or just, what's tiny shack or shed areas. So in some cities, when the cities have a say or have some management over these camps, then it's easier for us. Then we know exactly what to expect in those places. And some places we're literally on our own. Like we go literally into the bushes and find people and identify and make a note of the locations. Like we actually literally first in Maine next to church. And then we, first in Maine next to church and zip code and everything. And then when the workers go out, they literally go to that place, first in Maine, next to church.
These are the enumerators that will then
Correct.
Go to these locations.
Right.
But the actual count, which all this was leading up to, was delayed because of the coronavirus pandemic. And ultimately, it ended up being rescheduled to late September, which is a little tight because that's right before when enumeration efforts overall are scheduled to end, with the final count officially due by the end of the year. And even if it hadn't been delayed, advocates have expressed some doubts about how effective this approach has been in the past. This is Jennifer Friedenbach, director of the Coalition on Homelessness. So my understanding is that there's going to be enumerators sent out to places where they know people gather, which includes shelters. But, I mean, have you seen census enumerators try to count people who are living in, say, encampments before?
They tried to do that last time. And, they'll catch some of the folks. They'll catch the more obvious folks. But it's not just a matter of them. So they need to find them, and then they need to complete the census forms.
Right.
So there's a little bit of space between A and Z there that, for folks who are outside, they're in full crises. So, their number one thing is, it's trying to find a safe place where they can sleep, where they're not going to be bothered. Sometimes that means sleeping during the day. Because a lot of folks don't want to sleep at night because there's a fear of crime and you don't have a door to lock. And so that's very unsettling. So the enumerator presumably coming out during the day may come across somebody, but they're going to be asleep and, probably not that comfortable waking people up. So there's all these hit and misses. So even for the ones that they identify, then getting, happy to catch them in a place where they're able to do the forms right then and then follow through. So you have like at each level another loss on your counting with this population.
What about people who don't want to be counted? I mean, you mentioned that there's a concern among people who have young children who don't want to be contacted necessarily by any government entity because of fear of CPS. Do people who are living unsheltered generally, in your experience, want to be counted by the census?
I think most will be fine with it. Mm-hmm. I think there is going to be a chunk of folks that are not going to be. And, part of that is just being in the crisis mode and not wanting to take the time to do it because there's so much else that you're dealing with at that particular moment. There's also going to be some folks with severe mental illnesses that maybe suffer from paranoia and this kind of stuff. And then you're going to have undocumented folks that are going to be concerned about whether the data would be kept safe or not and whether they would end up being a target, which are really, I think, for a lot of folks, pretty, you know, very legitimate concerns. You know, families with kids and also young people that are unaccompanied by families also are going to try to hide out. So you have a lot of kids that maybe were in a really unsafe facility that ran away, that are underage, that technically they're supposed to be brought back, you know, and a lot of times what that happens is they get brought into custody, right? So so there's going to be folks that are going to be nervous about talking to a census person or doing the census form from that perspective. So there's a variety of things. They definitely add up. And starting from even being able to identify people as unhoused all the way to people refusing to sign.
In theory, lots of people who don't have a permanent place to live are still able to access the internet because they have phones with data plans. But it's not quite so simple. Friedenbach told me one of the biggest obstacles is power.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is access to electricity, right? So the computer situation and your belongings always getting stolen and confiscated by the city, which is really regular. Being able to keep your, even if you have a smartphone, like being able to keep your device juiced. So there's a constant changeover there. So that's a real problem. So there's an even bigger logistical problem than there is a problem with being able to navigate the computers and knowing how to do all that. And I think that for unhoused folks, I mean, it runs the gamut, you know, and there's a lot of people very sophisticated with computers and a lot of skills there. And then folks that don't have as much, but it's really the electricity is the and having the equipment is the big barrier.
She told me a little more recently that she hasn't heard of enumerators entering shelters and isn't sure if they'd even be allowed in, since shelters are generally closed to visitors and new residents to prevent the spread. And keeping devices powered has become pretty much impossible. I asked for an update from the Census Bureau and haven't received one. And of course, someone who's homeless may also have other barriers to participation in the census. These issues, poverty, housing, disability, overlap, as Jessica Lehman pointed out. She's the director of Senior and Disability Action in San Francisco.
One other big concern is that so many homeless people are seniors and disabled people. And there's a system for going to what the census is calling group quarters, like nursing homes, homeless shelters, jails. It's an interesting model of having staff count people instead of having people fill it out themselves. They still have the option of filling it out themselves, which is great. And so we'll have to see how that works out as far as making sure people are accurately counted. They may not have a smartphone. We have a lot of members of Senior and Disability Action who use a landline phone and don't use computers regularly. And so the idea of, oh, I'll just go online and fill this out is not something that comes so easily. And again, it's just another hurdle, right? If people don't see a personal benefit of filling out the census, then it's, well, why would I go to the trouble of figuring out how to use that computer program? There are also tremendous access questions and issues.
Yeah, I mean, my question about that is if they get the form in the first place, because the forms go out by address.
Right. That's so true. So many homeless people won't even know that this is happening because they won't get a letter in the mail. And people have pointed out, you know, you get a letter in the mail. If it says resident and it's from some government agency, are you even going to open it or are you just going to throw it away? So that's where we have to go to people one by one and say, hey, let me show you how easy this is. I know you have a lot going on in your life. And if I can help you do this, this is going to support our communities and bring in money for the programs that we need to house people, to feed people, to provide health care, et cetera.
That is how the census works, by the way. At this point, if you're listening to this, you probably remember getting a little piece of cardstock in the mail that invites you to fill out the census for your household online. But to be clear, you don't need to have gotten this postcard in order to fill out the census. So in theory, having no address or not being able to independently read the postcard shouldn't technically bar you from being counted. This is how Sunny Lay, the Census Bureau partnership specialist we heard from earlier, explained that to me. if I live at a fixed address, I'm going to get a piece of mail that has a code on it that I can enter to fill out my survey online.
Mm-hmm.
What would I enter if I don't have an address and I don't have a code?
You don't need either.
So how do I do it? What do I put in?
The same way. It's like there is a field, say, without code, without the census ID. Click that. You take you to the next page, mm-hmm. and then just keep on until you finish. The same thing with the address. So we have a question on all the form. Are you experiencing homelessness on April 1, 2020? And the answer is yes. So that's how every few years we read in the paper that according to the Census Bureau, between 2010 and 2020, we found out these many people experienced homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we know.
And how do you avoid double counts with that?
Oh, double count is a good problem to have, because the Census Bureau at the back end, that's why we ask for your birth date and your age. So birth date, age, name, locations, sex, race, ethnicity, all those things are clues. If one person having all those three the same, then we know that's the same person. What it's a coincidence of one person having the same name, same birth date, same age, same sex, same race, same ethnicity. So it's very unlikely. So we have that ability at the back end to recheck the information. The undercounting is what our concern. Okay, we can't afford to undercount anyone or to leave out anyone. But overcounting is a Census Bureau's problem.
For some people, particularly people with visual impairments, this first very analog step in a digital process poses a hurdle, while the digital census itself might be more accessible than previous versions. That is, if they have the right technology at hand. I talked about that with Senior Director of Programs at Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired, Scott Blanks.
Blind and low vision folks have a few different ways, depending on their vision, of how they might access the internet through computers, smartphones, etc. Somebody who has some functional vision might typically use a technology that we commonly call magnification or magnifier. And this is actually a software program that's built into the device that you're using. So it will, in addition to, as its name indicates, make text larger on the screen, you can also change the color contrast and flip the color so you can have white on black or black on white text. Someone who's blind uses typically what's called a screen reader, which is, again, a software program that translates the information that is generally presented to most people visually into spoken text. And it's a synthesized or robotic sounding voice, generally. And you can adjust the speed of that voice. So someone who is sitting in front of a computer, like if I'm sitting in front of a computer, I would have my screen reader speaking very quickly. So it's almost equivalent to when someone's doing a visual read and they can process 4 or 5 or 6 words at a time. The speed at which someone listens to a screen reader is also very quick. A number of people are still using Braille, and technology has evolved so that you can use devices called Braille displays, which connect either through wireless means or through USB to various devices, and allow you to read the information that's presented on the computer screen or the smartphone screen in Braille. And it is refreshable, which means that you read a line of text, you push a button, and you see the next line. So those are ways in which people access the internet or have the potential to access the internet. But again, one of the most common barriers there for folks is that of the cost of devices, of internet access itself, of a cell phone plan, but also of training and understanding how to use those technologies. You can't just pull a computer out, turn on the program that's going to speak the information to you as a screen reader, and know how to work that program. It does take some time. Not all blind and visually impaired people have access to technologies which would allow them to interact with a smartphone, a computer, a tablet, in order to have the same access to information that many other people do. So there is, I think, some lack of awareness about the census and the importance of it. There is also, even for those who are aware of it, the ability to fill out the census may be impacted by their level of skill in working with a computer. Or again, as we mentioned, the possibility that a website may not be accessible, which would prevent them from completing the task. So we have a lot of work to do. I think our concerns do mirror what many other people are working up against. We have populations who are concerned and may still be under the impression that there is a question about citizenship, which in fact is not the case. So we hope to raise awareness about that and help people understand that these questions lead directly to decisions about funding and districting.
In order to help people fill out the census who might not be comfortable with the new online format or didn't understand the mailed prompt, local organizations were relying on in-person support. Not in the sense of enumerators knocking on doors, but rather places like libraries or events and drop-in centers where people could come to ask for help filling out their census or just ask questions about the process itself. Jessica Lehman's organization, Senior in Disability Action, was working on educating people in the community about the census and why it matters, the money that's allocated based on the population count, for example. Another organization, Community Tech Network, has been helping to bridge the digital divide for a long time. Lori Santos Sanchez works with that group, and before the pandemic, a lot of her work was done in person, assisting seniors and other people with digital limitations. What has been your experience with the people that you work with in terms of how much they know about the census and how much they know about that it's going to be done online and how to participate?
I would say that I am usually providing that information, and in part because as soon as we learned about the census being online, it certainly raised a lot of concerns on our part because we are doing the majority of our work with people who are not online or not very knowledgeable, who are usually accessing being online or computers through some public place, either a public computer lab or the library. So their knowledge of this is non-existent, other than at this point our own interest in them knowing and being sure that they be counted.
What kinds of obstacles does not being connected create for participation in the census?
Well, the thing that I think most of us experience who are connected is the 24/7 nature of that, so that we can make what we do online fit around the rest of our lives, whether it's picking up kids from school or working a job or sleeping, that we can get online anytime and do whatever we need to do online at that time. For these people, that is not going to be true. They are going to need to be able to get to a place where they can get online and access a computer, and likely will need help, so they need to have assistance there at that location. The other thing is key markers of being in the digital divide, that space of not having or knowing how to use technology, include lower education level, not having English as your primary language, being a senior, so you may have missed sort of the launch of technology. You weren't in school or employed at that time, so you never had it introduced to you as a part of life. Being disabled, and I have lost what the fifth one is. But there are five markers, and you can see how those markers all contribute to it being difficult to access and to complete the census.
Community Tech Network, Sanchez told me later, hasn't been specifically focusing on census outreach work since the shelter in place. But it did begin working on finding ways to connect people who would be isolated at home. They're hoping to provide devices configured for the program the client needs by mail to about 100 seniors in San Francisco. Then they offer phone assistance for things like getting the client set up for broadband internet if they don't have it yet, as well as software like video conferencing. But in general, with in-person gatherings largely banned, those face-to-face interactions and help centers have gone away. The challenge now is getting the word out about how crucial the census is to things like deciding how representatives of the House should be divided up by state, and how federal spending is allocated, so that people feel motivated to actually fill it out. As of mid-August, less than 2/3 of the population had completed the census nationwide. That's part of the reason the Census Bureau had been recruiting community-based organizations and activists like the ones you've heard from today to help encourage participation. One reason why someone might hesitate or pass on filling out the census is that they're not getting good information about it from a trusted source. In part three of this series on the 2020 census, we'll tackle misinformation and how trusted community messengers are trying to fight it to ensure everyone is counted. To find part one of the series, go to sfpublicpress.org. This series is made possible by Renaissance Journalism. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic.